Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, Career Failures, Chapter 2, No Network. Here we go. This cast, Wendy, is a part of a series about career failures, right?
Yeah, so we already did what to do if you miss your number. And this one is about what to do when you find yourself without a network.
Oh. That's what, jump. That's what, jump. No, but that wouldn't be fair. There are things to do. Are we going to chide people for not having built the network in the first place, or are we going to skip that part?
I'm going to be good and skip that part.
So, folks, I'm going to save you 20 minutes here and just put in the back of your mind that Mike chided you for not building your network before you were in trouble. But we're going to skip that because we figure you probably understand that, or hopefully. And going through this once, kind of being up a creek without a paddle, so to speak, you do that once and start to realize the value of your network. The next time, you'll hopefully be better prepared. So how are we going to help people here? What are we going to talk about?
Okay, so we're going to start now. Wherever you are, start now. And start where you are. Apologize. And don't ever stop building your network.
Okay, so what do you mean start now?
Start now. So we've talked before that career success is built on relationships and results. Results and relationships. In the beginning of your career, you can get away with just getting results. If you're a programmer and you have your little section, or you work in a warehouse and you have your little section, and what you do there doesn't affect anybody else, then getting the results at the end of the day, at the end of the week, is enough, because right. You're not interacting with anybody else, really.
Yeah, the value you produce for the organization is based on your results, and the position doesn't require great relationships to get the work done.
Exactly.
But as you develop, as you grow in responsibility, that at some point that is no longer true. At some point you actually just can't get away with your smarts. You can't produce results all on your own. You require the help of other people, hence the need for relationships.
Yeah, and you can get away for a little while of getting results and actually annoying people, actually, you know, putting people's backs up, but that doesn't last very long either.
That's right. Every information technology, or probably any engineering field, any manager has plenty of experience with the one person that everybody hates. The person is brilliant. She gets everything done. Her code is perfect, yet everybody hates her. And she gets away with it. Right, she gets away with it. It drives people crazy.
Yeah, but if you can look back after 20 years where that person is versus the person who maybe wasn't quite so brilliant but had relationships, is at the end of 20 years they're in very different places.
Yes,
unless you start to learn not to annoy people. And the first thing is that everybody has a boss, even if you're some teenage genius who creates an app and it's the best app ever and everybody, you know, it's Candy Crush or Farmville or whatever the latest thing is, that person has customers, and the customers have to be satisfied. Otherwise, they stop buying the product. And so it doesn't matter where you are. You always have at least one person that you have to please. And then later, you have more and more people that you have to please. And getting what you want, like a pay rise or a promotion or different work or more interesting work, is a function of the relationships that you have. People buy things from people they like, and the sales aspect of give me a pay rise because I do X, Y, and Z for you and I've provided this value, you have to do that in a persuasive way. And the more that person likes you, the easier the persuasion is.
Exactly. Especially, particularly if you want a pay rise.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes no sense to me. A pay raise. Okay.
I'm sorry. A pay raise.
No, a pay rise. I'd be sorry. I just love the way you Brits talk. It's just, you sound so smart. A pay rise. Okay. Sorry, folks. I couldn't help it. I guess, you know, it is true, right? I think people tend to take the statement, you know, people buy from folks they like. People think of it as buying products, right? But it goes beyond that. It's right. It's buying of ideas. It's buying into your ideas, buying into your programs, right? It's more than just a financial exchange, a transaction, right? It's the marketplace of ideas. If folks like you, you're more likely to get the things that you want. or that you need or you desire, right?
Absolutely. And then later, not long later, you start to find yourself working in teams and you need other people to get things done. You need people to pass work to you. You pass work on. Your work depends on someone else that has to interact with somebody else's work. And all of a sudden, you find yourself in this group of people that, again, you still might think you're smarter than all of them and that they're not terribly interesting, but your work depends on them, and the results that you get are no longer just your own. They depend on other people's results. And the only way to get the results that you want is to help them get the results that they should be getting or they want. So you have to start being nice to people. And I learned that the hard way. I was like, I'm smarter than all of you. Like, I'm not going to be nice to you. Why would I help you? I know what I'm doing. I don't need to help you. And then I realized that my work suffered for the fact that they didn't know how to do what the things that I knew how to do, or they didn't know how to do it quickly enough, or they didn't know to give me the right information. And then I realized I would actually start having to be nice to people. And being nice to people includes being interested in them and knowing that they've been on vacation and remembering to say, hey, how was your vacation? And, you know, oh, how are the children? And is it half term yet? And are you going to do something fun? And if I wanted the praise that I wanted for my work, I had to do all of that other stuff. And I'm smart enough to go, okay, I want those results. So I'm going to do the thing I don't want to do, which is go be nice to people.
Yeah, and I think something popped up in my mind. Hopefully I can make this clear. I think there's a difference between actively being nice versus not being unnice. And I think folks can hear it. And I know it early in my career, I heard it wrong, right? Which is, I thought of myself as a nice person because I didn't actively go out to be not nice, right? I wasn't mean to folks. I didn't make fun of folks. I didn't say unkind things. I didn't swear at them. I didn't raise my voice. I've never done a lot of that. I've done it, but not a lot of it. So those of you who know me, don't write me, say I'm a liar. I've done it, but I don't think I do it in to a large degree. But I think there's a difference between not doing those things and being nice and actively being nice. And some of us with different DISC profiles, different behavioral patterns, we think about it differently. I remember, this is probably 30 years ago. We had, I'll call him Pete. I won't talk about his full name, but Pete was a great guy. And because of some of the stuff I was doing, I got to know him fairly well for somebody who was an absolute peon. I think it was the first entry level programmer at the time. And he was generally a nice guy, professional, just a great guy. But he had a reputation with the staff of being aloof. And I was just lucky to see this because I can't remember why I was privy to these conversations. I think he might have asked me about it. And Pete was aloof because he'd come in the morning, he'd go up the elevator, he'd walk to his office in the back corner, and he'd probably pass 20 people. And he was deep in thought and he never looked at people, never acknowledged people. Not because he didn't care about them. He cared deeply about them. But he was so lost in his own thoughts, he didn't even think about the idea of acknowledging folks. And so to him, he was a friendly guy. He wasn't being unfriendly, right? He was just busy in his head. And it took a while for him, you know, he finally got a coach. And the coach said, look, you can't do that. If you want people to see that you do care, you have to interact with them. You have to have a relationship with them. And the way you do it is when you get out of the elevator and walk to your office, you pay attention to people. You look at them. You know, the people who say, good morning, Pete, you actually answer them because you heard them. You look at the eye and say, good morning. And he went from being passive about it to being active about it. And his reputation changed immensely. So if you're tuning Wendy out because you think you're a friendly person or you have relationships, sometimes not true. You got to be active about it. Now, if you're a high eye, if you're like the outgoing, gregarious person, then you probably don't have a problem here. But for some of us, at least half of the world, this is something we have to work on actively. Okay, I'm sorry, I talked too much.
No, I agree with you. I got caught by the CEO of a company that I was working for. I was walking between two desks, backwards and forwards, in the middle of trying to solve a problem, and she was stood in the corridor. And I walked back and forth past her maybe five times. And on the fifth time, she said to me, you can smile, you know. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
oh, and it's cringed because it's the CEO, and I was deep in, I'm going to solve this problem. And I was taking, there was a person standing there and I knew who she was, but I was solving my problem.
Yeah. And just, not to go beat a dead horse, but I was just with Mark at an effective communications conference here recently. The effective communications conference, folks, if you haven't gone or haven't heard about it, you should go to the website and check it out. It is just phenomenal. But there's a lot of role play. It's a very active, it's not sit down at your desk and just learn stuff. You're actually doing it, right? That's how you learn, by actually doing it. And so one of the exercises is somebody who is naturally a reserved person is asked to role play a role where they're more assertive. They're normally a task-oriented person. They're asked to play somebody who is more focused on people. And part of the people side is you smile, right? That's the big thing. And this person doesn't naturally smile. And he was role-playing somebody with a different profile than them that had to smile. And he thought he was smiling. I mean, literally, he was, in his head, he was smiling. He didn't smile once, I swear. He did not smile. Like, literally, he didn't know how to smile. Now, later on, he knows how to smile. I mean, later on, we talked about this, he's actually smiled, kind of laughed at himself a little bit. Great guy. But that's how unaware we sometimes we are about how we communicate with folks. So, yeah, whole smiling is big. Okay, so I'm sorry, I took us down some big rabbit hole. An important rabbit hole, folks. We're
Oh,
down a rabbit hole for sure, but this
absolutely.
is an important
Yeah.
rabbit hole. It's not your just
Absolutely.
ordinary, ordinary rabbit hole. This is a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
The idea of relationships is not just knowing who someone is and them knowing who you are.
That's right.
There is a relationship is something deeper. I don't think I have a relationship with the person who serves me coffee in Starbucks if it's not someone I've seen before. It's like their only interaction with me is the size of my latte. A relationship entails more than that, and that more than that is being friendly and knowing something about them, and even, I hate to say this, caring a little about them. As a high D, I'm like, oh, anyway.
Right. So it doesn't, so folks, gonna go back to where we were. It doesn't matter if you're working on a project, it doesn't matter that the one piece of project is perfect, right? The one that you're working on. If it doesn't work the rest of the project, or if the project manager spends more time calming the waters around you because you don't have relationships than managing the project, it just doesn't matter. It's not your career's not advancing. It doesn't matter how smart or how good you are without the relationship. Now, how does this start to affect somebody who's thinking about moving a job, moving or getting a different job somewhere?
Yeah, so maybe after a couple of years, you're ready to change jobs and you find something great advertised and you apply, and maybe you get an interview, but then you don't get the job. And you think, why? And a lot of the time, it's because someone not even as good as you, potentially, knows someone at the company and they have extra information, or they know the hiring manager's friend, or they even had a good word put in for
Wait,
them.
wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let's just in this makeup world, I have perfect information. I know that I'm better qualified than this other candidate. I'm a better programmer, I'm a better engineer. I know markets better than this other marketing guy. Yet he's getting the job and I'm not. And you're saying it's because of a relationship?
Potentially,
That's
yeah.
and how is that fair? I mean, that's
It
that
is not fair.
Okay, so we're going to stop that, right? I mean, we're going to put an end to that.
Yes, that's not fair. Work isn't a meritocracy. Oh my God. Like I just probably broke a million people's bubbles. But it's not fair because that when you say fair, what you're thinking about is equitable, as in everybody gets the same portion when you're like when you're dividing cake, or if I cut the cake, you'd get to choose. So everybody gets something equal. And that's not how work works. That's not how the world works. The world works because people get things because of their relationships. Human beings are fallible. They're easily swayed. We're absolutely delusional about our own abilities and our own choices. And people will choose a candidate with less qualifications who can get on with the rest of the team, or who they know something about in terms of their relationship strength by the fact that they know somebody else in the company, rather than someone who's brilliant and who they don't know anything about.
Yeah, and the world is not fair, folks. It's just look around you, and you can just see that with your own eyes and ears. But putting aside fairness, I mean, who's to say that your measure of fairness is the same as my measure of fairness? You know, if I'm the person who got the job as a result of my relationships, you think you're smarter. Well, my argument is like, dude, you may be smarter, but I get things done because I know people, right?
You got the job, right? So actually, you're smarter.
Well, I'm saying even just in terms of effectiveness, right? If we want to measure effectiveness, it's not how smart somebody is, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to think about fairness that way, it's not about how smart you are. It's whether you get stuff done. And the fact that you're smarter than me, or you're a better engineer than me, or a better software programmer, or a better marketer, it doesn't matter if I get the job done. And because you don't think relationships matter, and I do, and I happen to be right because I know relationships matter, I get things done better. And the fact that I got the job because I had a relationship over there, you may think that is not sufficient, or that's not a good reason for me to get the job. But as a result of doing that, by having that relationship, I've demonstrated that I think relationships are important. And people know that folks with relationships get things done better and faster. So you think you're smarter? Well, folks, if you're just shaking your head, disagree with me, look, for somebody who's a high C, high D, who doesn't naturally value relationships, I'm the one person that in this organization who would, you know, might have at one point in my life agreed with you. And I would have been wrong. Relationships do matter. Anyway, so, you know, forget the whole fairness thing. If I have, as manager, I have a choice between two people, one person who's absolutely brilliant, but has poor relationships, another person who is less than brilliant, but meets the standards, right? And has great relationships, I'm going to take the person with the great relationships every single time. I won't blink an eye.
Every single time. Yeah. So hopefully we've convinced everybody that they need to start working on their network if they haven't already.
Yeah. Okay. So I haven't. I you know, Mike and Wendy have convinced me. Yeah. So I wish that were true. But what do I do? What do I do now? Yeah. What do I do? Like, I'm stuck. What do I do?
Okay. So the thing you want to do is start where you are. The relationships that are most important are the ones that are closest to you. So your boss and your coworkers, the people who work with you every single day, start with them. Partly because it's easier, they're in proximity to you, or you talk to them every day. And partly because they're the ones that are going to have most influence short term. You don't need to go find like a VP to be friends with if you're at an individual contributor level, because you're wasting your energy. Start with the people who have influence over what you're doing.
Okay, I don't have to go straight to the CEO and have a relationship with her,
no.
Right? Okay. All right, no. Good. Good. Yeah.
Especially when you've annoyed her by not smiling.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. like having no network is holding you back. Like, whoever you are, it is holding you back. And we can say that without even knowing you. It is. But you can't develop an amazing network overnight. You can't go out and it's not like Facebook. You can't add 300 friends and instantly say, I have relationships with them. Those aren't relationships.
I can't tweet it to the world. I need a friend.
I need a friend. No. Yeah, no. So we'd love for that to be, I'd love that to be true. Like, I'll go on Facebook, I'll pick 300 random people and they'll all help me when I'm in a bind. No, that's not going to help. So start with your boss and your team. So instead of working with your head down and or with your headphones on, start listening to the things that are going on around you. So is there someone who's struggling with their work? Is there some piece of information that you have that would help someone else? Is there a skill that you could use that you have that you could use to help someone else? And a lot of the time it's simple things. You know, you can hear someone huffing and puffing and being frustrated. And if you say, hey, is there something I can do? Like, they can't Google something, or it's an Excel spreadsheet and they can't get it to sort, or, you know, they've got a piece of code and the syntax is wrong and they can't see for looking the stupid period that's in the wrong place. So just offering to help those people is a start to the relationship.
I love that point, Wendy, because I think that the tendency is for folks, they don't have a network, they immediately start thinking too broadly, right? They start thinking three or four levels removed, you know, within the organization, you know, three levels up or two levels up in the organization, or they even go make it worse. They start thinking about, I need to build a relationship outside of my company. So they start thinking about, well, how do I meet somebody in XYZ company or a competitor or whatever? And That's hard. That makes it a lot harder rather than just starting with the people you interact with on a daily basis. And if you can't build a relationship with them, you certainly can't build a relationship with people outside of the company, right? So
It's true.
I think that's brilliant. Start where you are. Start with your team members. Start with the peers. Start with the people who are on a cross-functional project team, for example. Focus with the people you see day to day, right?
Yeah. And the other thing I think people do, to your point, is that when they think big, is they think, oh, I have to have dinner with these people, or I have to have lunch with these people. And
Yeah, they
that,
make it
again,
hard.
like an hour for lunch or an hour and a half for dinner with somebody you barely know, and you're only getting the hang of developing relationships, is really hard. Like, don't go there. Just do something simple. Like, if everybody's having a rough day, go to the chocolate machine and bring everybody a bar of chocolate.
If you're producing a report that's consumed by the organization and there's somebody you know who's griping about it, griping is a strong word, or is having difficulty with it, put it that way. Go reach out to him and ask him what the problem is. Maybe you can help. Maybe he just doesn't understand it, or maybe there's a slight change that can be made, right? If I'm on the receiving end of that, that goes a long way. Even if you can't help me, it's like the fact that you cared enough, there you go. Just
Yeah.
reach out to folks.
We had that last week on one of our ops reports, right? And somebody said, please, Tracy, could you put the page numbers on? Because it'll make a real difference to the way I'm able to keep up
Right.
with the conversation. And Tracy's
Absolutely.
like, of course I will. It'll take me 2.5 seconds.
Right.
And a lot of the time it is those really tiny things that make a difference to other people's understanding of your work and then their appreciation of it. Because
Right.
if they don't understand it and they're frustrated by it, they start to associate that with you.
Yeah, they start to impute motives, right, where none exist. And the small things help make things better and can have a tremendous impact on the relationship. The small things can also work against you, right? It can be a very small thing.
Oh, yeah, it's like sand in your shoe, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So I think what you're saying is kind of be proactive, offer to help, offer information, offer to be the one who comes in early or stays late to help out a peer, right? Start to do those things that makes other people in the organization's lives easier. And folks, they'll notice. They will absolutely notice, especially if you've been the curmudgeon who's been a thorn in everybody's side, right? They'll absolutely see the difference.
Yeah.
And you'll get a lot of credit for it. You'll get more credit than the person who wasn't the curmudgeon before, frankly.
That's
So
true.
take advantage of it. I mean, if you've been the jerk, stop being the jerk. You'll get tons and tons of credit because people recognize somebody who identifies that they have an issue and they change. You get credit for helping, and you get a lot of credit for being willing to change. So, okay, what else can we do?
Okay, so one of the things we're going to do is apologize. So this is
Okay, now you
brilliant.
lost me.
This is
Now you
like even
lost me.
worse, right? So if you've offended somebody intentionally, which some of us go around intentionally offending people, and I know some of you are like, why would you do that? But we do. Or unintentionally, you need to apologize. Because if you don't apologize and that person still has that bad feeling about whatever it was you did, then you're trying to build a relationship on faulty foundations. It's like building on quicksand. Every time you get somewhere, they'll remember that moment, or you'll do something and it'll remind them of that moment, and whatever you've built will disappear. So it doesn't matter if it goes back months or years, you can still apologize.
Do you send them an email, maybe, or tweet it?
No, you need to do it in person, unless you're in different countries, in which case you probably want to do it by phone.
Phone, but
But
not
if you
email,
can,
right?
not email, no. If
Okay.
you can, do it in person, great. If not, do it over the phone, and draw them into a corner. You don't want to do it in front of your whole team. It's just a private moment between you and the other person, and make sure that they've got time to listen to you, so that you're not, don't interrupt them when they're on the way to breakfast, because that's really annoying.
So what would you say specifically? Because I've never apologized to anybody in my entire life, so
You're such a liar, my Kazan. So something like this: Aaron, I apologize for my behavior at the Stagegate meeting. I threw you under the bus, and that isn't something a teammate should do. And I've regretted it ever since. And I should have made this apology much earlier, and I regret that I didn't. And the person's probably standing there with this, I saw something today, slapped by a mullet look on their face.
Slapped by a mullet.
Yeah. That was an awesome phrase.
Is that like an achy breaky moment, or never mind? It's, you probably don't even understand what I'm referring to. Billy Ray Cyrus, ring a bell? No, oh, never mind. Slap my.
I remember that. So yeah, they probably stand there with, you know, shock on their face, and you can make that easier for them by saying, "I just wanted to apologize," and just walk away, so that they don't feel any pressure. Because the idea of apologizing is you're making things better. Giving them pressure to reply is not making things better.
Yeah, I think we have a podcast on how to apologize somewhere, but. Just before we go on, and we could, again, we have a whole podcast on apologizing, but notice nowhere in the example that Wendy gave us did she explain why she did what she did, or the reason she did what she did, or why the other person is partially at fault. You can't apologize to somebody and then explain away why you did what you did, because it doesn't sound like an apology anymore. It's not an apology. It's an explanation. And look, every time you apologize... Well, maybe not every time, but much of the time you apologize, there's something in the back of your head where you may have reasons for having done what you did, or the other person sinned against you and you think you're somewhat justified. It doesn't matter. You have to drop all that and sincerely apologize, take the blame, and let all the other stuff go. Otherwise, it's not an apology. Just saying. So
yeah,
go, if that doesn't make sense, go listen to the How to Apologize podcast. You'll find it useful.
And it's unlikely that this person is going to forgive you straight away and have a completely changed attitude towards you.
Really?
Because yeah. if you threw them under the bus in the stage gate meeting, which probably had 30 people at it, they're not going to forgive you lightly. But if you apologize and then change your behavior and don't do it again and make an effort, you know, if you know there's something that they haven't done that you would normally have thrown them under the bus for, then going to them ahead of the meeting and saying, hey, we've got a problem here. Can I help you sort it out? Can we do something so that it doesn't get to the meeting? Then that person will start to believe that you were sincere in the apology.
Exactly. You know, and also you can apologize for things that were really an absence of behavior on your part. You know, for example, if there are people who you've been close to and you haven't made any overt efforts to be friendly with them, you can apologize to them as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd recommend you do, right? If you haven't reached out to somebody, they're on a team and you haven't been overly friendly, you want a way to kind of kick off the relationship where it didn't exist before, apologize for not having made an effort before.
Yeah. So here's an example. Susan, I apologize for never really getting to know you. We've been working on this project for 2 months together and I have been far more focused on the tasks than who I was working with. And I really regret that. I pledge to do better in the future.
The look on the other person's face.
This face is
priceless. Priceless. Bring your mobile phone so you can take a picture of it.
Make sure they're sitting down. But, you know, nobody makes apologies like that. Oh, not many people make apologies like that. But people who really mean them do. People who really are sincere in regretting their behavior and wanting to have a relationship with you. And people who have really good relationships apologize a lot more than people who don't. Though their behavior towards other people is a lot better, they still make more apologies.
Yeah, those same kind of people who have great networks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. This point did tie to our podcast in some strange remote way. Yeah, this is how you build network. This is one of the behaviors you engage in to help build your network, right? Apologies.
Exactly. Apologies. Okay.
Yeah. And then we're done, right? I mean, we're just like...
Yeah. Just do it once for one day and then it'll be fine.
No, this is like growing crops, folks. I hate to use that analogy because people use it all the time, but this is building relationships it's like planting and, you know, seeding and I don't know, sowing. I mean, there's things that farmers do. I don't know what they are, but I know it takes time. I know they start with like a field and they put seed down and then at some point I have food on my table, but it doesn't happen overnight and relationships are like that, right? It's organic. It's natural. It's part of nature. And those kind of things take time. There's very few things in nature, like just deliver something overnight. You don't walk out one day, have no fruit on the tree. And the next day you have, you know, 10,000 apples falling into your hand. That's just not the way it works.
If you've never made an effort to get to know people or to build your network and to keep in touch with people and to keep interested in who they are and what's important to them, you're not going to be very good at it. I used to write on my Outlook calendar when I worked in an office, when people were going on vacation, I would write in when they told me they were going on vacation, and then I knew to ask, so where are you going? That sounds lovely. And then I would write on my calendar where they went. And so when they came back into the office, it would remind me they've been on vacation. They went to this place, so that I could say, oh, hi, how was Bermuda or wherever it was they went? Because when I started, you've been on holiday. I've been doing your work for you. That's what mattered to me. I've been doing twice as much work. And by the way, here's your stuff back. And I fixed it for you because you were doing a really rubbish job. So I really had to focus on not saying all the things that were in my head, but saying the nice thing. And so I literally wrote it on my calendar so that I would remember. And so that's, if you're as bad as I was, then you're not going to be very good to start with. So this overnight, like I'm suddenly going to have 300 people in my network, isn't going to happen. You're gradually going to be better, have better relationships with your peers. And then you can go to maybe the people that you work with on other teams, or you can, someone you met on a training course or someone you met outside of work, and just gradually build it up. When you start caring about other people and being interested in what they're interested in, I have noticed, there is a lot of detail that you have to remember that doesn't necessarily rank as important in your own head. And so it's easy to forget. So going gradually is one way to overcome that.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's, you start, do what we say, start with those folks closest to you, your team members, peers, et cetera, and then slowly broaden your network. And the broader your network, the better, clearly, right? I mean, that's absolutely what you want. If you're in that, really helps you when you're in a career crisis, right? You don't have a job or something happened, like the broader your network, the better. If it was all, people in the company from which you got fired, that's probably not good, right? Mm-hmm. But you start there and then you broaden it over time. Different companies within the same industry, different industries, local, not local, overseas, right? There's probably, 1,000 different ways to categorize your network. And you want to be as broad as possible.
If your network right now is you and your best mate, then you, your best mate, and one other person is broader than you are now. So that's better. Don't think that the goal is 300, but that's the marathon away. Like, let's just start with baby steps.
There you go.
Every time you make a connection and there's someone who associates something positive with your name, you do something for yourself. Your reputation goes before you is a cliche because it's true. And so you don't know who the people in your network know. And when you go for that job that you really wanted, it might be that the hiring manager for that job knows someone that you know, and they have a positive reaction to your name and say, oh, I know that bloke, he's all right.
Yeah, absolutely. If I'm hiring somebody, right? If I'm hiring somebody who's coming from a company somewhere that I know of, and I know somebody else in that company, do you think I'm not going to ask my mate over in this company XYZ, hey, do you know Wendy? Tell me about Wendy, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, that's absolutely. And if you're a manager and you're not doing that, well, shame on you, because you'd like to know that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
And so that's it, right? That's, that's a start. Well, I shouldn't say that's it. There's a lifetime of building your network, folks. This is something you do for the rest of your life. You are never done. It becomes just part of the substrate of how you go about your day-to-day work.
Yeah. And you're starting with inertia. So the start is hard. But as you go forward, it gets easier, partly because you're in practice and partly because you have a bigger network and so you can meet more people. So it will get easier. Shall I sum up?
Yes, please.
Okay, so start now, right now, in this minute. Start where you are, apologize, and don't ever stop.
Folks, I cannot stress how important this is, building your network and building a habit of building your network, right? You do this right now, it seems, if you're not naturally inclined toward doing this, it seems hard because it's different. You've never done it before, and you're probably not very good at it. But you will get good at it, and it'll become a habit when you reach somebody, you go to a conference and you meet somebody, you'll start thinking about how do you keep in touch with that person? How do you give to that person? How do you give, give, give? That's, and we didn't really talk a lot about that, but that's how you build your network. You give, you don't take, it's giving. So anyways, great. Thanks, Wendy. That was a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks. Bye, everyone.
See ya. Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. See you later.